Orbiter X. Episode 4, Flight to the Moon. The object of the Commonwealth Space Project is to assemble the manned space station known as Orbiter X, 1,000 miles above the surface of the Earth. Unknown to Colonel Kent and his ground staff at CSP Woomera, the plan is hostile to the interests of the scientific organization called Unity. Led by Dr. Max Kramer, Unity is already well advanced in space travel, and now it aims at establishing a world government by force. The Orbiter X assembly crew, consisting of Captain Bob Britton, Douglas McClelland, and Flight Engineer Hicks, are attacked by Unitists and taken to their headquarters, where Kramer invites them to join his organization. They refuse, and in a desperate bid for freedom, they take Kramer himself as hostage and board a Unity ship which has been lined up for test flight. Kramer agrees to cooperate, but his attitude is suspiciously calm as he starts the ship's engines and turns to Bob for further orders.
What are your instructions, Captain Britton?
You will turn into orbit when you reach an altitude of 300 miles. We'll work out our course after that.
We're lifting!
What's your controls, Kramer?
It is not necessary. The ship is operated by an automatic pilot, which is preset on a fixed course. There is no need to touch the controls until we land.
Oh, yes, there is. Our destination is Woomera.
That is where you're wrong, Captain Britton. Our destination is the moon.
What? The moon?
You're crazy.
Let me turn on a scanner before the acceleration hits us.
Get back at your seat, McClelland. The booster jets are opening.
Boy, that was quite a punch.
It certainly was.
You can turn on the scanner now, Mac.
Okay. Look. That's the Earth underneath us.
Yes, and where did we take off from?
Judging by our course now, it could have been from somewhere in South America. Am I right, Kramer?
I have nothing to say.
Then take over the controls and prepare to turn into orbit.
Must I repeat myself? The controls are locked in an automatic pilot.
Then unlock them and look sharp about it.
Listen to me. This ship has been built for a specific job. It is designed to operate between my Earth headquarters and the Unity base on the moon.
We're back to that nonsense, are we?
Let him go on.
Thank you. No provision has been made to operate the ship manually during its journey because we are satisfied that the automatic pilot is virtually foolproof.
And what are these controls in front of us?
Auxiliary retrojets. They can only be operated on the point of landing, and they are simply used for selecting the appropriate landing platform at the receiving end.
And the receiving end in this case is supposed to be the moon, is it?
Yes. I gather you find it difficult to absorb the fact, but it's perfectly true. My pioneers landed on the moon in the days when your Orbiter X project was still on the drawing board.
Well, how could they get there without stopping at a space station for refueling?
We evolved a new fuel based on the formula which the Russians used as long ago as 1959, when they launched their first successful moon probes. Even at that time, Professor Vladimir Dobrun-Ravov revealed to the world that their first projectile was large enough to contain a cabin for 2 or 3 people. In view of the general advance since then, I fail to understand your apparent wonder at our Unity achievements.
Tell us about this moon base of yours.
Well, as you would expect, it consists of a series of pressurized caves in the wall of a crater.
Yes?
We started with one cave, we sealed the walls with plastic, provided double doors and a lock at the entrance, and pumped in air.
I see.
From that small beginning, we now have workshops, living accommodation, an observatory and control room, even an agricultural center. You shall see for yourselves in due course.
As much as I'd like to, it's my duty to hand you over to our people in Woomera. Mac, you must check over the controls for ourselves.
Yes, I think we'd better.
Icky, just sort out the radio equipment. I want to talk to Colonel Kent in Woomera.
Okay, Bob, I'll have a look at it.
You can save yourself the trouble, Hicks. When I started the ship's engines, I also took the precaution of switching the voltage control. You'll find the circuit is burnt out. So, my dear Britton, your friend Colonel Kent will not be hearing from you.
Oh.
BSP Central Control, Brown speaking. Yeah? Yeah. Okay, I'll tell the Colonel.
The Minister of Astronautics is waiting for you in your office, sir.
Oh, good. I wanted to see him. Check with the tracking stations and let me know right away if there's any developments.
Right, sir.
And you might ask for a special report on the Orbiter X components. I want to be sure they're not losing height or deviating from their course around the Earth. I'll be back soon.
Good day, sir.
Carry on. Ah, hello, Sir Charles. It's good of you to come along.
No, not at all. I know you can't get away from here, and it's easy enough for me to fly over when I'm in Canberra.
Oh, nevertheless, I appreciate it. Do sit down.
Thank you.
Can I offer you a drink?
Oh, that's very kind of you. May I have a scotch and soda?
Of course.
Thank you. Now, what was it you wanted to see me about?
I'll make it as brief as I can. Ice?
Please.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Now then, if I may just review the position.
Yes, of course.
I've lost my two leading assembly crews. One led by Captain Bradley in ship Orbiter 1, the other by Britain in Orbiter 2. You know how I feel about these men.
Yes, don't we all?
We don't know what happened to them. All we do know is their ships are now a couple of derelicts circling out there in space.
Right.
And all our other ships have been grounded, pending inquiries and tests, which may go on for a year or longer.
Yes, these things take time.
Now, we're working on the assumption that there's a fault in the basic design of our ships. But the more I think about it, the less it satisfies me. Because I've checked hundreds of records, and I know that every component was tested to breaking point from the design stage onwards.
So, we must have more tests?
Which may well prove to be pointless.
What exactly are you driving at?
Just this. The answer to the problem is not to be found here on the ground. It's locked away inside those two derelicts 1,200 miles above the ground.
You may be right, Colonel Kent, but at the moment there's no way of getting to them.
That's the point. I must have permission for one more ship to take off and carry out a survey.
I hate to say, but aren't you showing some disregard for the safety of your pilots?
No, sir. I'm making a formal application to pilot the ship myself, and I can handle it without a crew.
Really? I admire your courage.
Oh, never mind that, Sir Charles. I foresee that unless we act quickly, the whole Orbiter X scheme is in danger of being shelved indefinitely.
I doubt that, you know. There's too much money sunk in it.
If we have a long hold-up, people will start asking awkward questions, and the government might decide to sell out its Orbiter X interests, perhaps for dollars.
I see, yes. Perhaps I'd better have a word with the Prime Minister.
That's what I hoped you'd say. You can speak to him from here. I've already asked for a line to London. It's essential that I should be given permission to go ahead with the survey. And there is one other point.
What is that?
As well as our manned ships being grounded, our unmanned projectiles have been grounded too. It's quite ridiculous. Typical bureaucracy. There's a moon probe should be on the launching platform now. Why can't we go ahead with that?
I did have a word with the PM about it, but I'll mention it again.
Thank you. Even the projectile will give my staff a little encouragement and perhaps some hope for the future.
I quite agree, yes. Well, now, if you'll just show me where your phone is, I'll speak to the Prime Minister right away.
So much for the engine room, Bob.
Yes.
As far as I can see, Kramer was telling the truth about the controls. The only way we could change the ship's course would be by using a socking great shifting spanner on those compression valves.
And where would that get us?
Well, by opening the starboard jets, we might be able to turn back towards the Earth.
The chances are we'd either burn up in the atmosphere or shoot past without even getting into orbit.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
I know I am. You can't maneuver a spaceship by playing around with valves and spanners. To interfere with the automatic pilot would be just as dangerous.
So whether we like it or not, we shall be seeing the Unity moon base.
Yes. The old pipe dream comes true. And it had to happen this way.
Well, at least we don't have to worry about how we get there.
No. Our worry is how we're going to get back. Come on. Better go to the cabin and see what's happening.
Ah, Captain Britton. Have you satisfied yourself that everything is as I said?
Yes.
No luck, sir.
Now, what about the radio?
That's a complete write-off. Can't do anything with it at all.
Why is the computer clicking?
As this is still a test flight, I'm checking stresses on the hull.
Well, I hope you're satisfied with the results.
Yes. Everything appears to be in order, despite the fact that my engineers were unable to make a final check before takeoff. And you will be interested to know that we are following the predicted moon course.
What happens if we don't?
The error would be put right by radio control from either the Earth or Moon headquarters. They are tracking us right throughout our journey.
You once told us that all your ships are fitted with deflectors which screen them from ground tracking stations.
Yes, from your stations, not from ours.
Yes, but if we could turn off the deflectors, there's a chance we might be spotted by Woomera. Where's the switch, Kramer?
There is none. The screening device and the deflector aerials are integral parts of the hull.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes, Hickey?
When we came aboard, I noticed some short aerials up on the forward part of the hull. They're certainly not radio. Now, they could be the deflectors.
Yes, the radio array is further aft.
No, you're mistaken.
I don't think so. You're onto something, Hickey.
Now, if I went outside with a cutter...
Those aerials belong to the intercom.
If you had said they were part of the navigation system, I might have believed you.
Yes, he slipped up there.
But what's your plan, Chief?
Well, I'd like permission to go out and nip off those rods flush with the deck.
Permission granted. I'll come with you.
No, you don't have to, sir. I did plenty of underwater salvage work and demolition when I was in the Navy. This lark isn't all that different.
You mean you'd prefer to tackle it by yourself?
It is a one-man job, as you might say.
And you know exactly how to do it, eh?
Well, I should do by now. There's some cutting equipment in one of these lockers. I saw it when I was having a scout round. Ah, yes, this is the stuff.
Look out, laddie, the gear's floating all over the cabin. That gas cylinder nearly brains.
Oh, sorry, Captain Mac, I forgot about zero gravity.
Don't let your enthusiasm run away with you.
If I let you do this job alone, you must keep in touch with us by helmet intercom all the time. You understand?
Aye, aye, sir.
Then check your spacesuit. Now, don't worry about the gear. We'll collect it for you.
I'm all set, sir. The suit's okay.
Good. Close your helmet and check intercom. I'll turn on my own throat mic so that I can keep in touch with you.
Helmet closed. Oxygen okay. Checking intercom. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Fine. Can you hear me? I'm not closing my helmet, but the intercom should be working.
Yes, loud and clear.
Open the airlock for him, Mac.
Okay.
Got everything you want, Hickey?
Yes, sir.
Right. In you go. Good luck, chum.
Thanks, Bob.
And don't forget to make your lifeline fast before you step through the outer hatch.
Oh, I won't.
This is where old Hickey comes into his own.
Yeah, it's rather like leaving a shop.
Hello, control cabin. I've opened the outer hatch. I'm stepping out.
Is your lifeline fixed?
Yes. I'm moving onto the deck.
You know your magnetic boots won't react to all the plates.
Oh, I know, sir.
We can hear your thumping great footsteps in here. Are you all right, Chief?
Yes. Just looking at the Earth. It's like a big green ball. Funny to think that's home. Yes.
What's wrong?
I'm off the deck. Using my jet pistol to get back now. That's better. I can't believe we're traveling around 25,000 miles an hour. Seem to be standing still. But the moon's a lot closer.
You found the deflectors yet?
Yes, I can see the ones that are in the sunlight, but can't see anything in the shade, not even my hands. Inky black. I'm going to turn on my helmet light. I started working now. I've got the heat cutter working.
How are you feeling, Hickey?
A bit queasy, sir, but getting over it.
Good man.
Cutter's going through these rods like a knife through butter. Oh, wow.
What's up, Hickey?
The metal I've just burned through is shining like a diamond.
That's because there's no air to oxidize it.
Blooming welder's paradise, this is.
Hello, Hickey. What was that?
Must have been one of the rods. After I cut through them, they just stay put, so I have to throw them away. The last one hit the deck.
Those little rods will stay with us like pilot fish.
Yes, all the way to the moon. Kramer, what's the idea behind this moon base of yours?
It provides me with a valuable source of raw materials and a place of retreat in the event of my Earth headquarters becoming untenable.
So you realize that your plans for the world government might not come off?
No. I'm merely prepared for minor setbacks.
But with a base on the moon, I can't see why you're so interested in assembling Orbiter X.
After I have established the world government, the space station will be enlarged as part of the second stage of my master plan.
And what is that?
Only my very nearest associates know.
Hello, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, Hickey.
Well, I seem to have finished the job, but I'm just checking up to make sure I haven't missed anything.
Good.
Strange to think that the boys at Woomera might be seeing us on their tracking screens now.
Don't be too optimistic. Could be hours before they pick us up. Might not even pick us up at all. We're a pretty small target.
Don't let Hickey hear you say that. Break his heart.
Hello, sir. We're all clear. I'm entering the lock.
Fine.
I'm surprised that Kramer isn't more upset about this, Bob.
Yeah, so am I.
I suppose he realizes there isn't much the Earth Boys can do, even if we are spotted.
I don't know about that. At least we'll have broken his screen of secrecy. Ah, here comes Hickey. Well done, Chief.
What's it like out there, Chief?
Just wait till I get my helmet off.
That's better. Well, you're not cramped for space outside.
Let me take that equipment for you.
Thanks. I think I've done the trick.
I'm afraid you've just been wasting your time, Hicks.
I'm not sure about that. Anyway, Hickey, it's about time you had some rest.
No, sir, I'm all right.
Now, listen. There's still a long way to go yet. We'll divide ourselves up into three watches. Mac, would you like to take the first one?
Sure.
I'll take the second, and Hickey can sleep right through until it's time for him to take over from me.
Well, that's very good of you, sir. I tell you what, I'll give you both a call when breakfast is served. Mac. Captain Mac. Got some nice hot coffee for you.
What's that?
Coffee.
Oh, it's you, Hickey. How are we doing?
Well, we're getting pretty close to our target now.
Yeah, we are, aren't we?
Now, hold on to this squeeze bottle and don't scald yourself.
Okay. Really is coffee. How did you make it?
No, I didn't. Kramer told me where to find it in the food store.
Wonderful. Of course, I strapped down. Did that to avoid floating in my sleep.
Well, Mac, how did you sleep?
Hello, Bob. I seem to be dreaming most of the time.
So did I. The space doctors say it's caused by the weightlessness.
I dreamt I was floating around the Earth in a spacesuit, marooned on one of the components of Orbiter X. What's that picture on the scanner?
That, my friend, is a close-up of the moon.
What?
You're looking at the northern hemisphere. The large dark crater is Plato. Over to the left there is the Great Valley cutting straight through the lunar Alps.
Oh, I want to see more of this.
Yeah, finish your coffee first. You won't be able to when the retrojets start firing.
You mean we really are going to land?
Yes, I don't think there's any doubt about it now. According to Kramer, we're landing in a crater which, with his usual modesty, he's called Unity. It's right on the rim of the moon as we see it from the Earth. I'll pan the television camera over to it.
Mm-hmm.
There it is. Not far from the crater of Wargentin.
I see. Well, if that's where the moon base is, he's chosen a good spot.
Yes, being on the rim, it's safe from Earth observation.
Exactly.
Oh, you're awake, are you, Kramer?
But of course.
How big is this Unity crater?
It is no more than 20 miles across.
And how high are the walls?
The almost vertical cliffs rise to a height of 1,000 feet.
Now, there seem to be one or two breaks in them.
Yes, those are canyons.
And where's the base you were telling us about?
Inside the western wall.
I can see something flashing down there.
Yes, what is it, Kramer?
That is our landing platform. As you see, my staff are there to receive us. I shall now stand by the auxiliary retro controls in order to make any final adjustments necessary to bring us down onto the target.
Hello, what's that?
The warning that the ship's inverters are about to start preparatory to landing.
Here they go. We're turning over. Nose to tail.
Get into your contour seats and fasten your belts. When the tail is pointing towards the landing platform, the retrojets will open. The jets are about to fire. Prepare for deacceleration.
We're not braking as hard as I expected, Mac.
No. I suppose Kramer knows his stuff. But if I was at the controls, I'd open the auxiliaries pretty quickly.
He's doing it now.
Something's wrong. Bob, look at the scanner. We're turning away from the landing zone.
Yes, and we're still coming down too fast. Kramer, what's the trouble?
A fault in the fuel supply to the auxiliary compressors. I must get to the taps.
Where are they?
On the starboard bulkhead. By the chair, and my engineer would have been on duty.
Can't do it on his own. Mac, Hickey, give him a hand.
Right. Leave it to us.
Yeah, hold on yourselves. If you let go, the G-thrust will throw you through the bulkheads.
Don't worry. We'll hold on.
All right, come out. I'll take the controls.
Keep them steady as they are.
Okay.
Right, Kramer, we've got dinner. Come on, over we go. Hang on to the hand grip.
Help me into the engineer's seat. That's it. Now return to your load.
Quick as you can. You've got about 20 seconds.
Go on,
McGee. Okay, Mac. If he gets the jets on full boost while they're crossing the cabin, we'll be finished.
I have located and corrected the fault.
Hold it, Kramer. Wait for the boys to get into their seats. Hurry up, Mac.
All right. What are you there for?
Okay, Bob.
Ground's coming up. There are too many rocks. I'm aiming towards a small crater. Stand by for crash landing. Here we go.
Bob.
You hurt?
No. Nothing serious. What about the rest of you?
I'm all right.
And me, sir. Just passing my belt in time.
Good. And Kramer?
Thank you for your interest, Britton. I'm quite safe. We are losing pressure through the engine room. I must toss the bulkhead.
Funny, I'm rather glad Kramer's all right. I must be moonstruck.
No, Hickey, he's a strange character. I wonder why he gave us time to get back to our seats like that.
Yes. Why did you do it, Kramer?
For purely economic reasons. You happen to be of more potential value to me alive than dead.
Oh, I thought we might have been on the brink of a beautiful friendship.
Turn it up, Hickey.
Okay, sir. Well, so we're on the moon. That's good to feel a bit of gravity again. Although there isn't much of it.
What's that? The ship moved.
Yes, it did. Can't see much from the observation windows until the dust clears outside. Something's going on. Crumb, have you any idea where we are?
Yes, I have.
But go on, what's wrong?
We have landed on quicksands.
What?
Quicksands?
Are you sure?
Yes, I know these areas only too well.
Well, we'd better get out of here.
If you leave the ship, you'll be swallowed up. In fact, there's a very real danger that the whole ship might be buried.
Are you serious?
Quite serious. We are sinking now.
Well, can't we start the jets?
They are choked in dust. If you turn them on, the compressors will explode.
Well, you're supposed to be the mastermind. What about it, eh? What do we do?
Our course will have been plotted by the staff at Moon Headquarters.
It's probably been plotted at Woomera, too, but that doesn't help us to get out of this mess.
Listen to me. My HQ staff will have put rescue measures into operation already. They will know our position, and no time will be wasted.
But how are they going to reach us here? They can't travel over those sands.
Nothing is impossible. And regarding your remark about Woomera, Hicks, you and your friends have overlooked a most important point.
Oh, yes?
You did indeed destroy the ship's deflectors, but this would have become immediately apparent to my staffs, both here and on the Earth. Within a very short time, they would have started their interference transmitters. We'll have been screened from your tracking stations throughout our entire journey.
I shouldn't be too sure about that if I were you. As you say, nothing is impossible, and strange things can happen to space radio.
Very well, Prime Minister. I quite understand. I'll tell Colonel Kent. Thank you. Goodbye.
Well, Sir Charles, what's the verdict?
Well, as you heard, Kent, I put all your points to him. Your offer to take up a ship single-handed is regarded as a very gallant gesture. He asked me to tell you that.
Thank you very much. But has he given permission for me to go ahead and do it?
No. He's got to discuss it with the Commonwealth government. There'll be a meeting in about 6 weeks' time.
6 weeks?
Yes, I explained the urgency.
And what about the moon probe?
The moon probe? Oh, well, he was good enough to leave that to my discretion, providing I keep him well in the picture, of course.
At least we've won a point there. I take it you've no objection to me launching the probe?
It's rather difficult, Kent. You see, the PM drew my attention to the fact that if there should be an unforeseen accident on the firing platform...
Oh.
I'm not saying that it's likely, but if there was an explosion... And if it involved any serious loss of life, the results would be most damaging to all of us.
So the main risk is to our reputations, is it?
No. I'm considering the broader issues. The entire Orbiter X project, in fact.
So even the probe remains grounded, does it?
In the circumstances, I do feel it would be foolish to take any unnecessary risks for no immediate reason.
And that's your final word?
I'm afraid it must be, for the moment.
Come in. Yes, Brown, what is it?
I've just had a tracker report in, sir. I thought you ought to be told right away.
Well, what is it?
An unidentified flying object has been seen approaching the moon at 1835.
What?
There was a good deal of interference, but the report has been confirmed by no fewer than 10 tracking stations.
Couldn't this object have been a meteorite?
Not a chance of that, sir. The trackers held it for almost a minute before it disappeared into the Wargentin area near the rim of the moon.
Did they get a description of it?
Only that it was cigar-shaped, made of metal, and rather bigger than anything we know to be in production on Earth, sir.
Right. I'll follow this up at once.
Right, sir.
Sir Charles, a moment ago you said it would be foolish to take any unnecessary risks for no immediate reason. Now we have that reason. So, can I have permission to launch the probe?
That was the fourth episode of Orbiter X, an adventure in the conquest of space by B.D. Chapman. It was produced for the BBC by Charles Maxwell.